We'll definitely keep an eye out if we catch sight of any orcs or adventures, Cassius replied graciously while nodding in both understanding and appreciation. Honestly, keeping you in the loop is the least we can do, and it costs nothing to send a message. On the other hand, Carver raiding each and every caravan that tries to make its way out of here hurts all of us. The sooner we can put him and his group down for good, the better.
No argument there, Sierra added. Carver already had a lot to answer for, and it seems that his list keeps on growing. Everyone chorused in agreement at the red-haired woman's statement, the three Hallow Guard members exchanging looks between one another and then focusing their attention back towards me.
We're still in the middle of working for the day, but we can offer you guys a place to stay for the night if you're looking to wait until tomorrow to go back to Aldford, Cassius offered. I know it had to be a long trek, even with horses.
We appreciate the offer, I said with a shake of my head as I moved to take a heavy pack off my horse. But we're going to have to keep moving. We just wanted to visit in person to let you know what was going on, and to drop something off. I held out the pack in my hand towards Cassius, seeing Sierra and Constantine holding similar packages meant for Kilgore and Berwyn. It can be rough out here, I said as Cassius took the pack from me and looked inside, his eyes widening as he scanned through the contents of the bag. And we want you to know that Aldford and Virtus are around to help if you need it.
This is too much,
Cassius shook his head as he glanced at the other bags that my friends were holding.
We're managing decently on our end here. We don't need anything.
Think of it as a housewarming gift, then. Plus, you might find yourself needing it later, Sierra countered from beside me. There's no telling where any of this stuff with Carver might lead to. A bit of extra food and tools never goes wrong, either.
Especially when it makes us stronger to fight Carver, or the orcs, if we need to, Berwyn said pointedly, having already figured out one of the main reasons for our support. If it comes to that, Constantine acknowledged with a nod, but also because we know all too well how the wild can be here. It's the least we can do to help.
Well, if that's the case, we certainly appreciate it, Cassius said, throwing the pack over his shoulder and sticking his hand out towards me a second time to shake my hand. And we'll keep the sentiment in mind if we can ever repay the favor.
Finding Carver or his base would be more than enough,
Natasha chimed in, having been content to listen in for the majority of the meeting.
The sooner we can put him out of our minds, the better.
Amen to that,
Cassius echoed with a nod as our meeting drew to a close.
We'll be in touch if we find or hear of anything. Safe travels in the meantime.
Safe travels, I repeated, as we all turned away from the group, Sierra and Constantine having passed along their packages to Berwyn and Kilgore. Moving silently, without another word, the five of us mounted our horses and turned away from Shadow's Fall, ready to begin the trek back to Aldford. But before we could make it further than a dozen feet, Sierra and Constantine cut their horses in front of me, their expressions a mixture of annoyance and concern.
There, Lear, Sierra began. You made it to the meeting. There was no news of note, like we expected there wouldn't be. It's time for you to take a break.
We just barely left, I grunted in confusion. It's going to take us hours to get back to Aldford.
That's right. It's going to take us hours to get back to Aldford, Constantine said. In the meantime, you're going to log off and get some rest. All of our play cycles are due for reset tonight anyway, so you can get a nice head start and maybe get more than 3 hours of sleep tonight.
Come on, guys, I can hold out until we get back, I protested, noticing that Bax and Natasha were completely ignoring the conversation, thanks to the filters the game world set in place to keep NPCs from reacting to out-of-character conversations.
Damn it, I cursed, my immersion breaking as I reminded myself that neither of the pair was truly real.
For a split second, I had forgotten that all of this was a game, something that I found was happening more and more often the longer I played.
No, you can't, Mark, Sierra countered, waving a hand at me sharply. You're working yourself so hard that even Amaranth declined to come out with us today. And when the hell does he ever avoid going out for a run?
I stalled, vaguely recalling my familiar mentioning that all he had in mind for the day was sleeping in the sun, and that he would bite me if I tried to wake him.
He was tired.
He's tired because you're tired, Constantine shot back. Amaranth is a lot more in sync with you than you think. If he's worn out, it's because you're worn out.
That's not how, I began to say, before sighing in defeat. My friends were right. I was beyond tired, even more than I was willing to admit to myself. Ever since Carver had reappeared, I had been running at full speed, trying to do everything I possibly could to simultaneously prepare for our inevitable rematch and to make sure that Aldford was adequately protected, at the cost of my own health and sanity.
"Everyone has their limits, Mark," Sierra said gently, sensing that my protests were coming to an end. "You are dangerously close to the end of yours. This game is fun and all, but you're taking it a bit too seriously. You need to rest or you're gonna burn out."
I never expected for us to end up in charge of everything, I admitted, feeling built-up stress seep out of me as I said the words. At least nothing as big as Aldford or Virtus.
"Oh, please," Constantine snorted. "You're a workaholic, Mark. We all are in our own way. There was no question that we'd end up in charge of something one way or another. But Misha's right. You really need to dial it back for a couple days and take a break. This next week is going to be busy enough, even if Carver doesn't throw a wrench into our plans. Especially once we get that ruin open. We're all going to need to be at the top of our game going forward."
"I know," I said, rubbing my face as I remembered that we still had the ley line to deal with. "Okay, guys, you win. I'll knock off for the night. Are you sure you're going to be okay to get my body back?"
"Don't worry about that. We'll take care of it," Sierra stated. "You go get yourself some food and unwind a bit. Go to bed, even."
"We'll be fine, Lear,"
Constantine said confidently before he started shooing me away from him. "Go and take a break. We'll catch up later." "Thanks, guys," I said as I mentally brought up the logout menu. "I'll catch you guys on the other side."
"Good night, Mark,"
Sierra added, giving me a wave. I paused for a moment to look at my two friends, their faces watching me carefully as they waited for me to follow through on my promise. Without another word, I nodded to them before I triggered the logout process, watching the world gradually fade to black. In what seemed like a blink of an eye later, I found myself back in reality, the pod that I had been lying in opening as it slid out from the wall, a soft chime sounding once it was safe for me to climb out. Blinking repeatedly, I reached up to rub my face as my brain slowly readjusted itself back to the real world. Logging out of Ascend Online had been a jarring process at first, the disconnect between the game world and reality often taking several minutes before one was ready to start moving around. But as with anything, it was something the body eventually got used to the more often it was experienced. With a grunt of strong yet largely unused muscles, I pushed myself out of the pod and into the deathly quiet apartment, my feet padding softly along the floor as I made a beeline to the bathroom, the first stop almost everyone had after any extended stay in virtual reality. Pausing for a moment as I passed by the mirror, I couldn't help but notice once more that the last week and a half had served to further enhance the sharp lines on my face as I continued to lose weight, all thanks to the VR diet and its side effects. I was fairly confident that this was the thinnest I'd ever been in my life, a feeling that was made all the stranger considering that I also felt quite a bit stronger and fitter, too. "I suppose it beats the alternative," I thought tiredly as I slowly stripped and stepped into the shower, turning the water to as hot as I could bear it, waiting patiently for the temperature to rise. If I had to choose between losing a bit of weight to muscular atrophy. Any further thoughts I had dissolved into nothingness as I stepped into the spray of steaming water, the heat cleansing the exhaustion that clouded my mind. It wasn't until nearly an hour later that I was able to pull myself out of the bathroom, feeling much more rejuvenated and awake. Glancing around the apartment, I found myself still completely alone, knowing that it would still be hours until everyone else finished with their day and logged off for their rest cycle. After a few moments of consideration, I decided that I didn't want to spend the rest of the day waiting for everyone to log out, nor to be awoken once they did. It had been quite a long time since I had some peace and quiet to myself, which I felt was something that I really needed, given how busy I'd been over the last few weeks. So, with that in mind, I grabbed a warm change of clothes, scribbled a note telling everyone where I'd gone, and left the apartment to go back to my condo, which had sat largely unused for the last month and a half. "Which means there's no food in it," I reminded myself as the elevator door opened on the ground floor of the building. With a resigned sigh, I realized that I would have to make a stop before heading home to pick up something to eat. Moving with purpose, I left the building, briefly stepping out into the freezing winter air that refused to acknowledge that spring was here, before hailing a cab and practically leaping inside the moment that the car ground to a halt. Quiet mode. I preempted the cab's question, then told it where to drop me off. As the car began to move, I reached to dig my phone out of my pocket, deciding to take the opportunity to catch up on what I knew would be a large number of messages and emails. It had been quite an unwelcome shock the first time I'd logged out of Ascend Online to realize that reality had continued onwards without me, leaving me with hundreds of messages to sift through, and at first glance, this time was proving to be no exception either. Scanning through my phone, I found that I had several updates from Etherworld Productions in my inbox and flagged them for later review, mentally cataloging them as earnings reports from our feeds. Slowly, as the car navigated its way through the automated traffic of the city, I paged through my inbox, eventually reaching the bottom of my list, with the two most recent emails catching my full attention. Bringing the phone slightly closer to my face, I read the subject lines of both the emails, feeling my heart skip a beat in surprise. Subject. Mom and I are going to be playing Ascend Online. From Dad. Sent today, 10:15 a.m. Subject. Hey, on my rest cycle 2. Wanna chat tonight? From Sonia. Sent today, 1:53 p.m. I paused for a moment as I considered the two emails, a wide smile slowly spreading across my face. With barely a second thought, I clicked on an email and began to read, completely oblivious to the fact that I had already arrived at my destination. Chapter 29. Thursday, March 21st, 2047, 6:07 a.m. Oldford, the crafting hall.
Phew!
I exclaimed as the familiar kaleidoscope of colors faded away from my vision, and I suddenly found myself in the heat of the foundry, with a rhythmic hammering sound echoing around me. Taking a sharp breath, I felt a momentary wave of disorientation as images passed through my mind, the game world rapidly updating me on what had happened while I'd been offline. Pausing for a moment to sort through the new memories, I put my hand down on the stone table before me and shook my head, waiting for the information overload to pass. I saw Sierra and Constantine's journey back to Aldford as they escorted my digital avatar back to the town, which then blurred into crafting as my automated tasks took over. I saw glimpses of myself working away at mass-producing items that would eventually be needed for the construction of the palisade or the guard towers that would be built into them. From everything that I could tell, there'd been no issues over the last day, and everything was proceeding on schedule. Almost everything, at least. I felt my heart drop momentarily as I looked around the foundry and saw Leandra's digital avatar working away at the smaller forge, a small tag notifying me that he was still offline. Leandra, offline, 121 tasks pending. The only reason why I could see his current status was because, before logging off, Leandra had given me permission to assign and modify his task list, a feature that we had all found to be very useful when it came to making the most of offline time. Unfortunately, on the other hand, since I could modify his task list, I could also see that he hadn't logged on in the last day while I was offline. It was beginning to seem that Leandra's treatment hadn't worked out for him. None of the emails that I'd sent had been returned, nor did anyone reply on his behalf. The only sliver of hope that I still had was that I hadn't found an obituary with Leandra's real name listed above it. With a shrug of resignation, I silently wished that I had thought to ask the elder man where he was getting his age regression done, so I could have called for an update. But I didn't think of it until after Leandra had logged off. Well, that's enough of that, I told myself with a shake of my head, trying to pull myself out of my funk. I had no way of finding out what had happened to my friend, and knowing Leandra, he would have insisted on me to keep working instead of spending my time pining. I just had to be patient and hope that he had pulled through. Speaking of working, I looked down at the table I'd been standing in front of and realized that it was the broken fragments of razor I'd managed to collect when I recovered my soul fragment. Shattered almost beyond recognition, the bronze blade and core underneath had given up from all the strain that I'd placed on it over the last month, and its final battle when that wolf spirit Veilforce shattered it in its jaw. Despite my best efforts, I was forced to admit that the blade was beyond repair, at least in any state that would make it combat-worthy once again, and I couldn't quite bring myself to smelt it down to raw metal for use as nails or something equally mundane. Razor had been my first major find in Ascend Online, and I was reluctant to simply toss the weapon away or reuse it for parts. No.
I decided that I would preserve the weapon by including a fragment of it in every weapon that I made going forward, so it would always be with me one way or another. But while all of that was very sentimental, it didn't address what I had to do next, something that I'd been both avoiding and looking forward to for several days now. It was time to make myself a new weapon. I was feeling much more confident with the ether-touched iron that we'd recovered from the tower to try my hand at making a weapon using the magical metal. In the few days since we'd brought it back, we'd managed to splinter enough fragments from the massive piece to give me enough to work with as I practiced smelting the iron. The experience had raised my blacksmithing all the way up to level 17, while also teaching me how to work around its rapid cooling, at least when it came to smaller items. Larger pieces were still notably more difficult to shape due to the amount of work needed, and more often than not simply fell apart when I tried to reheat them in the forge to make them more malleable. But that had been several levels ago, and I thought that it was time to put all my practice to use and try to craft a new weapon for myself. If not with the ether-touched metal, then with something else that I had lying around the crafting hall. First things first. Let's light the forge and make something easy to begin with. Like a hilt, I told myself, as I mentally prepared myself to get to work. With emotion as I walked, I decided to call over Leandra's avatar to help me through the crafting process with the forge, having learned that two sets of hands with the forge made things much easier than just one. Well used to the process, it took me only a moment to prepare the forge, the familiar azure-hued fire greeting my eyes as Leandra's avatar finished pouring the ether. Signaling the man to stop, I pulled out several fragments of the ether-touched iron from my inventory and began the process of smelting them down into an ingot, remembering to toss in a fragment of razor before the process was complete. Pouring the metal into a cast, I waited for a while for the slag to cool, going on to smelt other larger shards in the meantime. After I deemed the metal cool enough, I pulled it free and began crafting the hilt for what would become my new weapon. Now that the metal had been refined, it only took a minute for the metal to heat, and barely three for me to hammer it into shape, the relatively small object strangely retaining the heat from the forge much longer than the larger pieces I had worked with. Finishing the last strokes with the hammer just before it cooled, I carefully inspected the finished hilt for any defects or flaws, and to my pleasant surprise found none, as the finished item description appeared in my vision. Ether-touched iron hilt. Item class magical, item quality mastercraft plus 20%, durability 120 out of 120. Weight, 0.3 kilograms. Well, that turned out better than expected, I said with surprise. I'd never managed to hit Mastercraft quality with the ether-touched metal. The closest that I'd ever come had been good quality on a simple drawing knife I made as an experiment. Guess that little piece of razor was lucky. Heartened by my success, I put the hilt off to the side before I pulled out a larger ingot of metal and began to heat it in the hopes of making it into a blade, having long since decided that I would stick with the sword as my primary weapon. Given the amount of metal involved compared to the hilt, I had to wait patiently until it had heated enough before beginning to work it. After a few minutes, I pulled the now gleaming azure ingot out of the forge and hefted my hammer high as I set to shaping the stubborn metal. Heavy hammer blows echoed through the air as I brought it down on the ingot, my hands dancing faster than they ever had before. At first, the metal easily gave way to my rapid strikes, gradually flattening as I worked it into a blade-like shape. But as the minutes passed, the metal hardened and refused to budge, forcing me to place it back into the forge and reheat it. Hopefully better timing will do the trick, I thought nervously as I mentally counted the seconds that the metal was back in the heat of the forge. So far, I'd never been successful in crafting a piece that I was forced to reheat. Every time that I'd done so, the metal reacted strangely afterward, either becoming badly misshapen at the first strike with the hammer, or simply continued to melt itself down to slag, even after I'd pulled it free from the heat. 8, 9, I counted aloud as I waited for the metal to heat, pulling the now faintly glowing ingot back out of the forge at the 10-second mark, this time aiming for the bare minimum of time. Wasting no time, I set the metal back down and swung my hammer down at it, seeing it begin to shift under my rapid strikes once more. Feeling a sense of excitement surge through me as the metal continued to take shape, I redoubled my efforts, hoping to finish as much as I could of the piece before it hardened once more. No sooner did the thought pass through my mind than a loud cracking sound filled the air just as I brought the hammer down. Wincing, I looked down at the half blade I'd managed to create, seeing that I had somehow managed to crack it completely in half. Well, fuck, that's new. I grumbled in disappointment as I inspected the broken item, noticing that it had somehow turned brittle and even begun to flake. I set my tools down with resignation, then began to clean my workspace, tossing the scraps into a crucible for later use. Maybe there's something I'm missing? I asked Leandra's avatar, not expecting a response. I understand that it's a magical metal, but why can I forge a smaller piece in perfect quality, but larger pieces just don't come out at all? I tried once sticking it into the regular forge to heat it back up, but ended up with the same problem we had before. It just doesn't do anything. Leandra's avatar stared at me blankly, before shrugging vaguely at my question, but saying nothing. Well, if this was easy, I guess everyone would be doing it, I said with a sigh, as I took another ingot that I'd smelted and prepared to try again, this time planning on leaving the metal in a few seconds longer. I guess this is going to be a bit of trial and error until we can find a process that works. And for the next 2 hours, trial and error were all that I did, focusing specifically on the error side of things. All my testing had reduced over 2 dozen blades to ragged scraps of metal in various stages of completion before something inevitably happened and ruined the process. What frustrated me the most was that the failures I had were rarely consistent with regards to the variables I adjusted. More often than not, the metal that I was working on destabilized, simply turning into a metallic mass of slag the moment I pulled it free from the forge. But it was the rare other incidents that had me racking my brain, wondering what exactly I was doing wrong. On one occasion, while working the ingot, the metal suddenly began to boil, large molten bubbles forming in the slag before popping violently in a spray of molten metal everywhere. On another, the hammer I was holding actually caught fire after I struck the ingot, the metal I'd been trying to shape then freezing itself into a block of ice. But it was my latest experience that made me decide it was time to put my hammer down for the day and consider using something else to craft the blade for my sword. On that particular attempt to forge a blade, I had been working the metal as fast as I could, faster than I knew was even remotely safe. At the speed I was going, I knew that one slip-up would likely cost me both tools I was working with, and likely several fingers, too. Yet for all my haste, I didn't have a chance for an accident to occur, for the metal that I'd been working on had simply decided to give up and explode in a blinding flash of colors, having vanished completely from the anvil that I'd been working it on when my vision returned. Not so much as a fragment of it remained afterward that I could find. God damn it! I swore in frustration as I blinked the after-images from my eyes and threw my tools down. Whatever optimism I had started the day with had long since vanished under the repeated failures. What the hell am I supposed to do? I closed my eyes for a moment and rubbed my face, trying to cling to the only silver lining that I'd been able to find during the morning. All of my repeated failures had given me enough blacksmithing experience to hit level 18 in the trade skill, even if it hadn't made any appreciable difference for my current task. Okay, I said after a moment, exhaling deeply as I glared at the Aetherfire Forge with resentment, then turned away from it and began to pace. It looks like the ether-touched metal is out, but what else can I use? Bronze won't be enough of an upgrade, nor will any of the spider claws that we have left. There's that ectoplasm from the Slave King, but that's kind of useless in this case. Maybe I can carve myself a blade from the snake bone we found. There's also that piece of ether-warped oak. I stopped as the last item entered my mind, realizing that I hadn't given the crystalline wood a second thought after Jenkins had handed it to me. Would I even be able to get an edge on it, though? I whispered to myself as I pulled the length of wood out of my inventory and carefully inspected it. And keep the edge on it? Glowing with a dull azure hue, the ether-warped branch appeared to be virtually unchanged over the last few days, the wood still cool and smooth to the touch. Staring at it closely, I could almost see a slight reflection of myself in it. Despite it having grown from a tree, it was obvious that it wasn't just wood anymore. Given how hard it was for Jenkins to carve through it, this could be pretty durable, I thought, while considering if it would be possible to carve the branch into a sword. I had made a few swords from regular wood in the past, and I did happen to have several ether-touched iron tools that I'd made as practice. Why not give it a shot? I decided with a shrug.
I don't have any better ideas at this point, and something tells me that carving wood is going to be much easier than snake bone. Excited that I had another option available to me, I cleaned up my area around the forge and left the foundry, letting Leandra's avatar resume its tasks. Walking through the crafting hall, I set up shop in a largely unused workspace and spread out several of the ether-touched carpentry tools that I'd made. Taking a moment to come up with a plan for the carving, I began to carve the crystalline branch into a blade. Initially, the work progressed rapidly as I cut off all the excess from the wood and exposed the inner core of the branch, which I found was much harder to carve as it took on an entirely crystalline appearance. Progress slowed to a crawl as I began to shape the core of the branch, the hours slowly passing by. The deeper into the core I carved, the more difficult it became to do so in a controlled manner, my knives no longer able to peel away the crystalline layers. After little progress for a time, I decided to resort to a hammer and chisel, gently splintering fragments off of the wood as I worked a single edge into my blade to be. More time passed as I continued to work on the blade, my focus completely devoted to my crafting. The experience was nothing like my previous attempts at crafting an item, where I had been mentally following a rote recipe in the back of my mind. This time I was completely in the moment, making it up as I went along. It reminded me of the time that I'd made the pots and pans for Ragna a lifetime ago. I was making something completely new, that I had never done before. I heard people walk past me as the crafting hall came to life around me, several of them stopping by to see what I was working on, some even trying to ask questions after seeing what was taking shape before me, but I was far too engrossed in what I was working on to reply. All I saw before me was what I had to do next, my hands moving with barely a conscious thought. And then, after several hours of work, it was finished, the item description appearing in my vision, followed by a notification. Ether warped oak blade. Item class, magical. Item quality, mastercraft, +20%. Durability, 160 out of 160. Weight, 1.3 kilograms. Your skill in carpentry has increased to level 18. I did it. I breathed numbly as I straightened myself from my crouched over position and felt muscles in my back protest. It had taken much longer than I thought it would, but I'd managed to turn the ether warp branch into an actual blade, the entirety of it having maintained its dull azure glow throughout the crafting process. Just one last thing to do, I whispered to myself as I reached for the glowing blade with a shaky hand and pulled out the hilt that I had fashioned earlier with the ether-touched iron, carefully attaching the two pieces together. Fitting perfectly, the blade locked itself into place and then somehow settled into the hilt as I began to wrap a length of snakeskin around the hilt. The moment that I finished my work, I saw a prompt appear in the center of my vision, causing my heart to skip a beat. You have successfully crafted a new item. You have the opportunity to name this item. Please enter a name. There was no hesitation on my account as I entered a name, one that had popped into my mind the moment that I began working with the wood. I paused for the briefest of moments as I confirmed my choice, and then accepted it, watching with wide eyes as my newly crafted sword's description appeared before me. Splinter. Slot. Main hand. Item class, magical. Item quality, mastercraft, +20%. Damage, 35 to 50, slashing. Strength, +7. Agility, +7. Mana, +100. Durability, 200 out of 200. Weight, 1.5 kilograms. Class, any martial, level 17. Special, ether-touched. The potency of any magical spells or magical-based traits channeled through this weapon are increased by 12%. My already wide eyes grew even wider as I read through the item's description until they finally landed on the ether-touched special ability. My mouth then fell open slightly as I considered the wording. Magic-based traits, I thought, reading and rereading the wording carefully as I looked down at the single-edged weapon, its length slightly shorter than its predecessor but possessing a thicker and heavier blade. Does the channeling part of that work both ways, I wonder? Would this weapon allow me to mana-drain a target every time that I hit them? I felt a surge of excitement course through my body as I considered the implications if it were possible. Grabbing hold or touching someone with a hand wasn't usually a difficult prospect during a battle, but it also wasn't always the most feasible, especially against more melee-oriented casters like Mazter or Carver. Having the ability to drain their mana just by hitting them would be a huge advantage, or in Carver's and his wolf's case, equalize the playing field. Ahem.
A patient voice interrupted my thoughts from behind me.
Are you done crafting yet, Lirian? Or perhaps I should come back a third time?
I spun around, my heart leaping in my chest as I recognized the voice, seeing a familiar figure leaning against the doorway.
Leandra!
I breathed in sudden relief, the man's face grinning as he met my eyes, then dropped down to the sword in my hands.
So?
He began, nodding in appreciation at my work.
What did I miss?
Chapter 30.
My risks were exceptionally high going into the treatment,
Leandra told us as we all listened in rapt attention to the man's story.
And there were several complications during the process, more than were anticipated. I was forced to be put into a coma for several days while they tried to manage everything.
Everyone from both my group and Freya's, save Drace, who was still out digging at the ruin, had come running the moment that I'd sent out a message that Leandra had returned. We had crowded around the man in the crafting hall before we decided to move our impromptu reunion to the town hall, taking over a pair of tables in the corner of the room, far away from where any of the other adventurers or townsfolk were sitting.
I was told that it would be a close thing, my surviving, that is. And I am far from being out of the woods yet,
Leandra continued in a small voice as he looked down towards his hands.
I won't bore you all with the medical details, but it was decided that my chances at survival would be better if they put me back into a send-on line, rather than risk sedating me once more.
Put you back? Sierra asked in confusion. Why would that matter? And why would they even think of doing that in the first place?
At my age, in my condition,
Leandra replied,
I likely wouldn't come out of that kind of sedation a second time. But as for putting me back into the game, somehow CTI learned of my situation and took an interest in my treatment. Apparently, they believe that cases like mine are only going to become more common in the future, and want to develop a treatment process that can be done in pod, so to speak, over a longer treatment period.
So right now they're still, working on you? I asked hesitantly, unable to help but feel concerned about how such a treatment could affect Leandra's overall health.
That's my understanding,
Leandra replied with a nod.
And they will continue to do so, assuming I don't suddenly fall over dead, that is.
Everyone gave Leandra a panicked stare, causing the feline man to raise his hands in a placating gesture.
I will be fine,
he soothed, before waving a hand dismissively through the air.
But please, enough of this. What will be. I have long since accepted this, and learned that one must make the best use of the time that they have in the moment. Tell me more about what I've missed. I have yet to fully sift through all of my new memories, and it seems to me that it's been quite an eventful week, yes?
There was a slight pause as everyone glanced between one another, then back to Leandra, still concerned about the ordeal that he had faced. Personally, I couldn't help but feel confused by CTI's interest in his treatment. To me, it seemed easier to let the already established businesses handle it, rather than attempt to integrate what had to be already a complicated process into their own technology. They must think that they make money off it by targeting the older generations, or maybe it'll somehow help them manage our health better in the pods? I considered before shrugging the question away. I didn't know the first thing about any of the technologies involved to create Ascend Online or the age regression process. If CTI thought that they could somehow improve the playing experience for us, I wasn't about to complain what they spent their research budget on. Maybe they'll be able to get rid of the VR diet side effect that we currently have. I don't think I could stand to lose any more weight back in reality.
Ambushed us a few days ago.
Freya was in the middle of telling Leandra about Carver's attack when I tuned back into the conversation around me.
We fought a pitched battle against one another, but at best it was a draw, and we were both forced to retreat.
I see,
Leandra said with a heavy sigh.
I remember Carver all too well from Graves's march. I had hoped that we had seen the last of him.
I think we all did, Thorn grunted, but it looks like he's put down roots to stay.
And found orcs to work with, too,
Constantine said bitterly before going on to recount Sierra and his portion of the encounter with Carver. As of yet, we haven't had much luck in finding any sign of him.
and we've scouted as far as 2 days north and northeast of Oldford on horseback.
The best guess we have at this point is that they're based somewhere in the forest to the east, Sierra added. But given the sheer size and density of that forest, exploring it quickly is impossible, even if we had several dozen people scouting at once.
Getting more guilds out here is looking more attractive every day, isn't it?
Halcyon asked in a whisper, elbowing me in the side as Constantine and Sierra continued updating Leandra.
We're drowning out here with all the space we need to cover, and having more bodies would go a long way.
No argument from me, Hal, I replied, having long since come to that conclusion myself. Soon as we can get our house in order here, we can start reaching out, but until then, it might be premature.
We can't wait too long, Halcyon warned. Else all the shit going down in Coldscar is gonna make the decision for us.
I know, I acknowledged, having heard this argument several times over the last few days. Let's just see where we are in a couple days and go from there.
Well, at least now the memories I have about the palisade make much more sense,
Leandra exclaimed, his yellow feline eyes focusing on me as he spoke.
How has construction proceeded overall?
Good as a whole, I said, realizing that it was my turn to update Leandra. We have enough housing now for everyone to have their own privacy, but nothing extra should anyone new arrive. Once everything with Carver became public, all of our building efforts shifted practically overnight to defenses.
Understandable. And given what you've all said, likely a wise decision.
Leandra agreed with a nod.
But did you manage to come up with a consensus for the design? The last time we spoke about the defenses, Drace and Jenkins were rather, disagreeable.
Yeah, they definitely were, I said, remembering the arguments we'd had about what to do with Oldford's defenses and just how necessary they were. But they're also far too busy to do the work themselves, so I made an executive decision. We started on the heavy fortification design that you and I came up with, the one modeled after a Roman fort. Leandra went completely still as he processed what I had just said.
Are you sure about that, Lyrian? As I recall, that plan was exceptionally ambitious, even for me. The amount of work and materials it would take. There is also the matter of, well...
Leandra made a subtle downward pointing motion towards the ground. Right now we need ambitious, I stated firmly, despite understanding Leandra's concern about the ley line below us. Everyone is afraid of an attack by either Carver, his bandits, or the orcs, and are willing to work hard in order to feel safe. This makes the best use of that energy and will set us up for the long term, assuming our other problem sorts itself out.
Plus, it makes sure that people don't suspect that something is wrong, Sierra added in a faint whisper, Leandra's eyes shifting over to the red-haired elf. If we stop building things and start preparing to abandon the town...
Then people will panic.
Leandra finished with a shake of his head, as his eyes glanced downward in memory.
I know. I have seen it firsthand during my volunteering days.
There was a slight pause as the man thought for a moment before he nodded to himself.
Very well. I can work with that for the time being. However, how is Drace proceeding on that particular front anyway? I would hate to see all of our hard work go to waste.
Very well, last I heard, I replied, taking a moment to check on the man via party sense. I found myself surprised to realize that during the time we had been updating Leandra, Drace had managed to leave the lakeside ruins and was now walking through the town towards us.
He's actually on his way here right now, hopefully with good news.
He did mention that he thought he could break through today,
Constantine said, turning his attention towards the open doors of the town hall.
Maybe he did.
We'll find out in a moment,
Halcyon added as we all turned to look towards the door, just at the same moment that Drace walked through it.
Hey, whoa.
Drace started to greet us the moment that he entered the building and glanced in our direction, only to find us all already staring back at him expectantly. He floundered for a few seconds in surprise at our unexpected attention before his eyes focused on a specific member of the group.
Leandra, you're back!
Hello, Drace,
the man said with a smile, beckoning the half-giant over.
Lyrian sensed you coming and told us. How is everything going today?
Great,
Drace replied, matching Leandra's grin while crossing the distance between us. His stride paused for the briefest of seconds during his approach, as his eyes briefly went out of focus, someone from the party no doubt updating him on what had happened with Leandra via private messaging, and filling him in on what we were just talking about.
"We just broke through a small section of the collapse that opens up into a chamber of some sort,"
was the first thing he said in a low voice, everyone leaning forward to listen.
"I decided to call a stop and block it off for the time being, but it should only take a few minutes more to break through the rest of it once we're ready to fully open it."
"What did it lead into?" I asked, trying not to let the sudden anxiety that I felt seep into my voice. Despite the confidence I'd shown to Leandra, I was painfully aware that we had invested quite a bit of time and energy in digging out the collapsed route in the ruin. Now that we had broken through, I really hoped that our efforts paid off somehow and gave us a way to reach the ley line. Because if it didn't, we'd be forced to start from scratch.
"A large room of some sort, in the same style as the ruin we dug from,"
Trace explained with a shrug, acknowledging how useless that explanation was.
"I didn't want to risk shining too much light through the gap I made just in case there was something in there."
"Probably a good idea," Halcyon agreed.
"I did find one interesting thing, though," Trace added. "The air in the chamber smelled a bit tangy, but it was definitely breathable, and there was hardly a pressure difference when I broke through."
"That's interesting," I said with surprise, noting that Leandra's face showed the same expression. "Can you describe the smell at all? Did it remind you of anything on the surface? I wonder if there's another route we missed."
"No, not really," Trace replied thoughtfully. "Best way I can describe it is that it smelled like mold, a little musky, a little damp, but nothing specific."
"Perhaps the Nefar's magic extended to air purifiers?"
Leandra queried.
"It seems odd for a chamber so long buried to have not acquired its own particular stench, especially if bodies were present when it was sealed, as I assumed there must have been."
"Maybe, but it also seems odd that they'd be running this long, too," I pointed out. "Shouldn't they have run out of magic?"
"With all the magic that we've seen through the etherscopes, they may not have," Caius countered. "We spotted dozens of sources the last time we took a scan. There's no telling what they could have been used for."
"That's a good point," I admitted, then shrugged my shoulders.
"Beats me, then." "I guess we'll have to find out," Trace said as he cast a quick glance around the table, then focused his attention on me. "Are we up for making preparations tonight and hitting it first thing in the morning?"
"The sooner the better," I stated, seeing heads nod out of the corner of my eye in agreement. "We have no idea how much time we're working with here." Everyone around the table nodded at my words and exchanged glances with one another, excitement visible on all their faces despite the seriousness of our situation. The chance to explore what could be an untouched underground ruin was one none of us wanted to miss, each of us having spent our fair share of time fantasizing to what we might find once we got down there.
"Going into the ruin means putting looking for Carver on hold, though," I thought, the memory of the half-orc still at the forefront of my mind.
Even with all of the adventurers in Aldford searching for the last week, we hadn't managed to find even a single clue to where he and his followers had escaped to, leaving me to think that he'd retreated at least a day or two's travel away from the town. But given how much time we've already devoted searching for him with nothing to show for it, we need to move on. There's no telling how much time we have to find and seal the ley line before it erupts. We can't afford to sit here paralyzed until he shows up again.
"We're still just taking our two groups, plus Lazarus is right?" Freya asked, bringing everyone back to the moment. "Assuming we can all even fit down there?"
"For the time being, yeah," I replied, then remembered something I wanted to bring up with the group. Though I actually wanted to add Alistair to our roster, too. We're a little light on healing as it is, and he can help with that, as well as give us two full groups of eight.
"Extra healers are never a bad thing in my book,"
Constantine replied, earning a sympathetic grunt from Drace.
"It would certainly make my life easier,"
Thea commented from her side of the table, having been content to largely listen while everyone else talked.
"Right now, I think Caius, Helix, and myself are the only ones that can heal at all."
"And my healing isn't exactly the most reliable," Caius pointed out.
"Alistair would be a great addition,"
Helix affirmed while nodding enthusiastically.
"He has proven to be steady."
"Okay. Seems like we're all on the same page, then," Freya said with a smile, not seeing any arguments from the other guild members. "I'll send him a message and bring him into the loop once we're done here. We should also give Lazarus and his group a heads up, too.
Yeah, I was going to send him a message when we're done here and let him know, I replied, looking around at all the faces at the table for questions. Does anyone have anything else to bring up before we all split up? Everyone shook their heads in negation and glanced around the table for anyone else to speak up. After a few seconds' pause, it became clear that no one had anything else to add for the moment. All right, I said, standing up from my chair while mentally composing a private message to Lazarus and asking if he was available to meet with me. In that case, let's start getting ready. Because tomorrow, we're going dungeon crawling. Chapter 31 Friday, March 22nd, 2047, 7:01 a.m., the Lakeside Ruins.
I really hope that the whole ruin isn't this cramped,
Alistair muttered aloud as the 17 of us milled about in various groups scattered throughout the main chamber of the Lakeside Ruins, while we waited for Drace to excavate the last bits of the passage.
Otherwise, the only thing most of us are going to see is the back of the person in front of us.
I hear you there, Constantine chimed in. I'm not quite claustrophobic, but depending on how today works out, it just might be once we're done.
I'm sure you'll be fine, I called to the rogue from my position leaning against the wall closest to the switchbacks. But if you start feeling antsy, let us know, and we can let you take point once we get down there. Maybe then you can be useful and spring any traps before we can step onto them.
I'm going to take a hard pass on that one, Lear, Constantine replied without missing a beat. I like my limbs firmly attached, and my flesh unmelted. Besides, Caius did a great job the last time with the trap springing. I don't see a reason to change things up now.
How considerate, Caius grunted sarcastically. You're a real team player.
No problem, bud, Constantine said with a grin. I got your back.
To push it forward into danger, you mean?
I take it that you've all known one another for quite a long time, Lazarus asked me as the banter between Constantine and Caius continued, the pair clearly burning off nervous energy while they waited.
Decades, I acknowledged, turning my head to see both Sawyer and Ransom standing beside the half-giant. How about you guys?
Just a few weeks for me, Ransom replied. Ever since, well, you know.
I see, I said with a nod before turning my head toward Sawyer.
Almost since release day,
Sawyer stated, giving Lazarus a grin as he spoke.
Though we didn't start off on the best terms.
Oh? I asked, raising an eyebrow as I looked towards Lazarus, who was shaking his head but shared the same smile that Sawyer did.
Sawyer liked to make my life difficult in the beginning, the half-giant started to say just before Sawyer interrupted.
And I still do, too.
Which hasn't changed.
Lazarus paused to glare at the red-armored man.
But after beating the shit out of one another, 5 times, we decided that it was better to work together.
That and because Iberia was literally on fire at the time,
Sawyer added.
That too.
Lazarus agreed, his expression faltering slightly as he spoke. As for the others...
Hey, we're through!
Drace's low voice filtered out from the tunnel leading to the switchbacks a heartbeat before he appeared in the entranceway, causing my attention to shift towards him.
I had to make a bit of noise clearing the entrance, so we should get moving, in case something down there decides to investigate.
Good idea, I replied, glancing back towards Lazarus and seeing that the emotion I'd seen on his face had vanished the moment having passed. Let's get everyone moving then. Turning around to face the rest of the guild, I cleared my throat loudly, the noise more than enough to cause all the conversations to stop as heads turned to look in my direction.
It's showtime,
I announced, seeing grins break out on several faces in the crowd as my words filled the air. Everyone fall into their assigned formation and move as quietly as you can. The plan is to move carefully until we get a better picture of what's ahead of us. Keep your ears open and be sure to speak up if you see something interesting.
Or if something interesting sees you.
Constantine added dryly. Murmurs of assent intermixed with laughter reached my ears as everyone moved into position, the sounds of weapons being drawn faintly echoing through the chambers. We had plenty of time to come up with a basic plan for exploring the ruin last night, and everyone was well aware of their roles and responsibilities. The only thing left now was to dive on in and see what we found.
Nodding at Drace to take the lead, I followed him as he turned around back down the tunnel, waving at a somewhat sleepy Amaranth to follow close behind me.
My kind is not supposed to be up this early in a new day,
the cat told me sullenly as he walked behind me.
The sun wasn't even awake when we departed.
We won't see the sun where we're going, I replied to Amaranth with a smile on my face. Though if you're tired, you can stay behind and sleep a bit longer, while we go on without you.
That will not be necessary, he stated,
his mental voice suddenly sounding much more alert. The rest of the journey down the tunnel proceeded in silence, only the crunch of our feet on the broken stone sounding as we slowly stalked down the passage that Drace had spent the last week excavating. Taking care not to slip as I walked down the incline, I kept a firm eye on Drace's back as he led the way into the lower ruin, several motes of light floating ahead of him and illuminating the way.
Here we go,
Drace whispered softly as we reached the bottom of the incline, which almost immediately opened up into a large, partially collapsed chamber, a maze of fallen stone preventing us from seeing deeper into the room. I heard Drace take a deep breath before he stepped forward into the dark room before us, the large stone fragments protruding from the ceiling above us causing our lights to cast disturbing and eerie shadows as we moved. It only took me a handful of strides before my nose caught a whiff of the tangy stench that Drace had mentioned earlier, which now that I smelled it, reminded me of moldy bread mixed with something extra that I couldn't quite identify. Holding Splinter tightly in my hand as Drace and I picked our way through the fallen rubble, I couldn't help but notice that some of the larger fragments that we passed bore the same sort of architecture as the chamber above us. It looks like a lot of whatever used to be here was affected or damaged by the explosion, I thought, my gaze landing on a massive piece of stone that had thrust itself through what I assumed was once a doorway, leading somewhere away from the chamber that we were in. Just how big was this place when the Nafar were still alive? And how much is still buried underground here? Questions about the ancient civilization continued to circulate through my mind as Drace and I continued to navigate a path around the fallen chunks of stone, on one occasion needing to climb straight over a rather large shard when we couldn't find a way past. But eventually, after several minutes of slow progress, we finally worked our way past the worst of the collapse, entering into a relatively clear portion of the chamber where we decided to wait for the rest of the guild, and the motes of light, to catch up to us. Looking into the gloom ahead of us, I decided to activate True Sight, my enhanced vision easily piercing through the darkness and illuminating the rest of the chamber. Blinking twice to get used to the sudden brightness, I was surprised that the first thing that I noticed were countless magical burns scarring nearly every portion of the chamber ahead of us. Damn, it looks like a small war was fought down here, I observed, my eyes picking out large chunks of stone that had been blasted out from the floor and several splattered pockmarks that could have only been caused by acid. It was as if the damage that I'd seen in the chamber we'd come from above had repeated itself down here, except on a much larger scale. My gaze gradually continued to work its way further into the room as I followed the damage inward, eventually ending up at the far wall, roughly 30 feet away from us. Cut into the wall, I saw two doorways roughly 20 feet apart from one another, both of them similar to the blocked one that Drace and I had passed earlier. One of the doors was wide open, the passage beyond it angling out of sight, while the other was sealed with what appeared to be a carved stone slab. There appeared to be some sort of design on the door, but I couldn't make out the detail from this distance. An open doorway is a good sign, I told myself, happy to see that our dungeon crawl hadn't been stalled by the need to dig once more, or that a collapse had ended it before it had a chance to begin. My eyes dropped downwards from the two doorways to look at the rather large pile of rubble that littered the ground between the two entranceways. It only took me a second after focusing on the rubble to realize that it wasn't actually rubble at all. Are those? I took a tentative step forward as I stared at the sight before me, my heart doing a flip once I figured out what I was looking at. Bodies, I whispered to myself. They're all bodies.
Lear,
Drace whispered in concern as he stepped up to my side and regarded the darkness warily, unable to see through it like I could.
What do you see?
The remains of the people who were trapped in here, I think, I replied in a low voice as my eyes tried to make sense of what they were seeing. Scattered everywhere on the ground between the two doorways ahead of us was what appeared to be well over a dozen withered and skeletal bodies. Many I could see were clad in armor of some sort, the finer details of which was obscured by the thick layer of dust that coated it. In several instances, I saw weapons protruding from the fallen bodies, which I couldn't help but notice were still clutched firmly in the hands of the other fallen. Whatever scene had once played out here long ago must have been one of complete chaos for the bodies to have ended up this way. "It looks like there were two forces in here that fought one another," I said with a guess, taking my eyes off the fallen bodies ahead of me and turning around to face Drace and the others who had managed to navigate their way through the maze of fallen rubble. The room is covered with battle damage further in, and the bodies are piled two or three deep in some places.
"The Arovians must have made it this far, then," Drace commented, referring to the old Dark Elf Empire that predated the Ascendancy. "It would make sense for them to try and secure the ley line from the Nefar if they were attacking the city here, assuming that all of this leads to the ley line in the first place."
"Maybe," I agreed, "but it doesn't look like it worked out that well for them."
"No, no, it doesn't," Drace said wistfully,
before the two of us glanced over at the rest of the guild and saw that everyone had managed to catch up.
"Want to send a few lights forward so those of us without dark vision can see?" Drace asked, motioning towards what I figured to be a near impenetrable darkness for his eyes.
"Sure," I replied, waving a hand to motion our casters over and repeating the request. Seconds later, four motes of light gently sailed through the air and illuminated the far end of the chamber, revealing the fallen bodies and twin doorways for everyone to see. There was a brief pause as the others took in the sight, the lights shifting ever so slightly to maximize their coverage of the area.
"Great! A bunch of bodies! Lying suspiciously on the ground! Weapons within reach!"
Constantine muttered softly as he moved to stand close to Drace and me.
"Does the Keen think that we're stupid? Of course the moment we get close to them they're gonna leap up at us!"
"Probably," Drace agreed. "To the leaping up and attacking us part, at least. But do you really want the game making things harder for us? Compared to the last few days, I, for one, am happy with an underhanded toss once in a while."
"Eh, I guess," Constantine replied with a shrug. "I don't know. I was just expecting something with a little bit more flair, to be honest. Maybe something like,
Constantine, if you finish that sentence, I am going to hit you," Sierra said softly as she joined the conversation, drawing looks of concern from the rest of the guild members around us.
"I don't need you jinxing us or giving the game any ideas."
"Fine,"
the rogue groused, holding his hands up as he turned to look at the red-haired elf.
"I just have our bottom line in mind, that's all. The more interesting our fights are, the better our feed ranks."
"That is the furthest thing from my mind right now," I growled, turning my head towards Sierra. "Can you peg one of the bodies with an arrow and see if it gets us a reaction? If it does, we'll light them up at range. If it doesn't, we can send Constantine forward for a more personal touch."
"You sure we can't start with that second option, Lear?" Sierra asked hopefully, despite pulling an arrow from her quiver and knocking it on her bow.
"You guys are mean," Constantine muttered.
"Quiet," I said to the rogue, then pitched my voice just high enough for everyone to hear.
"Heads up. We're gonna try and pull. Everyone line up."
Within seconds of hearing my words, the sound of shuffling feet filled the room as everyone fell into their assigned ranks, their weapons held high as they focused their attention forward. Glancing over the line to make sure that everyone was ready, I nodded towards Sierra and signaled for her to proceed, taking up my assigned place at Drace's side. Striding forward confidently a few steps ahead of us, I saw Sierra raise her bow to her shoulder and take aim at one of the skeletal bodies ahead of us. She paused for the briefest of moments as she steadied her aim, then let the arrow loose, the bolt leaving her bow with blinding speed and slamming into the side of a fallen body's head, piercing straight through it. We watched the pile of bodies carefully, waiting for a reaction. A handful of seconds passed with no visible reaction, then 10 seconds, then 20. When we reached the half-minute mark with no sign of movement from the pile, I called out to Sierra in the softest voice I could manage.
"Try one more time."
With a nod, Sierra pulled another arrow free of her quiver and placed it on the string of her bow, taking careful aim at another target. The second arrow landed true to its mark, piercing through another skull with a loud crack, leaving us all waiting in suspense for a reaction. Another half-minute passed with not so much as a twitch from the pile of bodies, Sierra's head eventually turning back to look at me with a raised eyebrow.
"All right, guess you're up, cunt."
I began to say before two impossibly bright figures appeared from the wall before us, forcing me to shield my eyes out of reflex as they momentarily overwhelmed my true sight with their presence.
Oh, shit!
I heard Constantine gasp, followed by similar exclamations from the rest of the guild around me. Pulling my hand away from my face, I blinked the after images away from my vision and looked back towards the twin sources of magic that had blinded me, the images rapidly resolving from two bright blurs of magic into two ghostly women of a race I didn't recognize. The pair hovered at the far end of the room, their expressions twisted into one of rage as they regarded us, emerald strands of hair billowing out all around them. Two tags appeared in my vision as I stared dumbfounded at the sight before me, my focus shifting ever so slightly to read them. Etherbound Spectre, Boss, Level 16.
Are you happy now, Constantine?
I heard Drace bark from beside me, a heartbeat before a screeching feminine voice assaulted my mind.
The Aruvians have returned!
The words hit me with a